Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we welcome back our book reviewer, Nancy Pearl, America's favorite librarian. Of course, you can hear her on Morning Edition from time to time. Today she joins us to look at some of the best new books of 2012, as well as a few overlooked books from the past couple of years worthy of attention. Nancy Pearl is the former executive director of the Washington Center for the Book in Seattle and a former Tulsa City County librarian. She's the author of six books in her BookLust series of books about great reading, and she's now a series editor for a new series coming out from Amazon, BookLust Rediscoveries. 12 titles of long out-of-print books worthy of reading and rediscovery. That series gets underway in April with the re-release of Merle Miller's A Gay and Melancholy Sound. Today, Nancy joins us to talk about some interesting books, which are, of course, available on our website, our new website at publicradiotulsa.org. Nancy Pearl, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Rich.
Is the year 2012 off to a good start book-wise, in your opinion?
I think in some ways it is definitely off to a good start. I think there's going to be a lot of wonderful books coming out later in the year, but I think there are some good books that have already been published or published very late in 2011 that people will very much enjoy.
All right. Well, let's get started. What did you bring to talk about first?
Well, the first book is actually a book from early 2000 and maybe late 2010 even, but I really wanted to talk about Gail Carriger's novel Soulless, which is the first of five novels called The Parasol Protectorate. And they're kind of, these are pure fun. They're steampunk novels set during the reign of Queen Victoria with a lot of modern accoutrements like dirigibles and various other things that in an alternate universe might have existed then. But the main character in this book is a woman named Alexia Terabody, who in a world that includes both werewolves and vampires, she is soulless, which means that just by touching one of those people, a werewolf or a vampire, she renders them unable to either transform into their wolf form or to do whatever vampires choose to do. And this is like a fabulous, just great fun romance. I mean, this is the kind of book I would say you need to pick up if you're 1 ounce of feeling blue. This is the book that you want to read. This will lift you out of that mood. And as I said, it's the first of five. The first four are already out. The fifth one is coming out this spring.
It's steampunk. This is like lots of gears and sort of technical inventions.
Yes.
And yet it has that sort of late 20th century undercurrent to it.
Yes, but keep in mind that Alexia has a very vicious parasol. And when I read this, it was one of those books that was just such an unexpected treat. I think a lot of libraries and bookstores might very well keep this in the romance section. And there is a romance, and you know right from page three, I think, where the couple appear on the page together, that they're going to end up together. But the pleasure is seeing everything that happens.
Is there a bit of a mystery with it, too, as well?
A little bit of a mystery. Uh-huh. A very little bit of a mystery.
All right. Well, that's Gail Carriger's Soulless.
Yes.
What's next?
Deborah Crombie's No Mark Upon Her. This is the latest, I think it's like the 14th, in a series by a woman named Deborah Crombie. Her main characters are Duncan Kincaid, who works for Scotland Yard, and his woman friend, as the books develop, their relationship develops, a woman named Gemma Hardy. And they get these books. A lot of series, I think, kind of fall apart after the author has written many, many of them. I mean, I always get the sense that in some series the author is just calling them in to his editor. But I think the Deborah Crombie novels get better and better and better, and this one is just wonderful, No Mark Upon Her.
Now, what makes that happen? I mean, do you think it's just the care they take and sort of developing the characters, maybe some of the minor characters? What exactly makes a series get better instead of sort of formulaic?
I think partly it's that the characters develop. I think that what happens a lot is that authors with their first books, you know, when they don't know that it's going to be a series, that they make a lot of decisions that they then come to regret because they've boxed themselves in for later books. So, for example, if your main character in the first book, and you think it's going to be your only book in this series, this mystery series, you have your main character married, then you're stuck with that until you can think of a way to get rid of the spouse.
Which could be fun in its own way, and literally
exactly.
Speaking.
Yes, I think that I once interviewed a Bob Dugoni, who has written a series of mysteries. In that interview, he talks about the choices that he made early on that he now kind of regrets.
And I guess when you write that first book, you want to tell an awful lot about your character to hook people in, and sometimes that doesn't leave you much room to grow.
Right. Doesn't leave you much wiggle room.
Yeah. It's good that Deborah Crombie has not fallen into that trap and has managed to find ways to make this series continue. And it's the 14th book, right?
About the 14th book, yeah.
No Mark Upon Her by Deborah Crombie. What's next?
Next is probably the best teen novel that I have read in years and years and years and years. And it's not fantasy, so that sets it apart from all the other teen novels we're seeing these days. John Green's The Fault in Our Stars is really, the main characters are teens. It's perfectly wonderful for older teens. I don't think I'd give it to somebody younger than 15, unless you as the adult in that teenager's life reads it first and says, yeah, good to go. But The Fault in Our Stars is just an awesome novel about two teenagers, Augustus and Hazel. And I read this book on a Friday a few weeks ago, and I have to say I haven't stopped thinking about Augustus and Hazel ever.
Now John Green, he's the author of Paper Towns, and so he's got a big following in that sort of young adult community.
Absolutely. Looking for Alaska was his mm-hmm. first one. Paper Towns was another one. Mm-hmm. An Abundance of Catherines. This is his fourth book. And this is a book that will just, I think, knock readers' socks off. It is just amazing.
That's John Green's The Fault in Our Stars. Now, it's written for a young adult audience, but if you're an adult and you kind of want to have a nice read, are you going to enjoy it as much as a kid?
Oh, yes, you're going to, and you know, I mean, nice read, I think that might give people the wrong impression. If you want a read that is going to be emotionally satisfying, and this is a book that is more complex emotionally than most adult fiction is.
Wow.
This is a book for you.
All right, that's John Green, The Fault in Our Stars. What's up next?
Eowyn Ivey's The Snow Child. First of all, you can't resist her name. Eowyn comes from The Lord of the Rings, and although I don't know that her parents named her from that, but I suspect they did because I don't think anyone had the name before Tolkien made it up. But The Snow Child is a set in the 1920s in Alaska about some homesteaders, and it's loosely based on the fairy tale of the Snow Child about this. In the fairy tale, these people build a snow child, like a snowman, but a snow girl, and she comes alive. And this kind of takes off from that, at the same time giving you just this really interesting picture of Alaska, the wilds of Alaska in the early 20th century. Just lovely, lovely writing. A lovely narrative and very, very, very sympathetic characters.
Now, when you good say the fable comes to life, is it sort of a fantasy or is it more of a realistic novel?
No, it's realistic, but yeah. she I think her the spark for writing it came from that.
Oh, all right,
that fairy tale.
Eowyn Ivey's The Snow Child. As we speak with Nancy Pearl, our book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa, She, you can hear also on Morning Edition, and she has her own series of books coming out over the next 2 years in which she revives old books that just need to be read. Is that it in a nutshell, would you say?
That's a wonderful way of putting it. The series is called Booklust Rediscoveries, and they'll be out available in both print, in digital, online, so you can be downloaded, and on as audiobooks.
Well, let's continue with our list here.
Okay.
Up next is William Landay's Defending Jacob.
Yes, if you are looking for a good legal thriller, this is the book for you. Just out, it's about a father and a son, a mother and a son, a crime, and it's one of those books where you don't know what's going to happen until the very last page. Excellent, excellent book. Really a page-turner. I stayed up way too late to finish this book.
and without giving anything away, the final scene is plausible yet totally unexpected.
Absolutely.
That's the worst thing. I would rather know what's going to happen at the end, sort of have an inkling of what's going to happen at the end, as long as it's plausible. The ones I hate are the ones it comes out of, like, you know, not even left field. It comes out of the bar behind the left field wall. You know, I mean, it's totally
the adjoining soccer field.
Yes, exactly. That's right.
Right. Yes. Well, this one is shocking but entirely plausible.
All right. Well, that is William Landay's Defending Jacob, a legal thriller. Up next, I thought this book had already been written. It's Treasure Island by Sarah Levine.
Levine, I believe. Mm. Treasure Island! ! Is just a hoot about a young woman who decides that she is going to live her life according to the precepts that she discovers by reading Treasure Island, and it is very funny and just so clever, so witty. And again, there's a kind of shocking turn at the end that when you step back and think about it, it makes perfect sense. But it's not anything that you could see coming.
Give us an idea of some of the precepts of Treasure Island, the original by Robert Louis Stevenson.
Curiosity, standing up for yourself, living your own life, the kind of freedom of choosing to do what you want to do and not live by other people's expectations.
Ah.
And this is a book, when I tweeted about this book, I just used !! All through it, all through the tweet, because I just love that it's called Treasure Island !!
And I'm assuming the main character is not living on the high seas this time.
No, the main character is living on land, definitely on land, and having sort of normal issues with boyfriends, sisters, and parents.
All right, well, that's Sarah Levine's Treasure Island !! You have to ask for it by name, right?
Right.
Up next is Alexander McLeod's Light Lifting.
And Light Lifting is a collection of short stories that is just so strong, so strongly written, so self-assured. It's hard to believe that this is a young man writing these stories. He is the son of novelist and short story writer Alastair McLeod, both Canadian writers. And this is one of those, this is an example of why I think really American readers are missing out on a lot of good fiction when we don't get all the Canadian, the top of the Canadian list. This is shortlisted for one of the big Canadian literary awards, and it was also on the American Library Association's notable book list, the New York Times notable book list. It's an amazing collection of short stories.
And are they urban stories or are they rural stories?
No, most are urban. Most are urban short stories. In fact, the first story is about two friends who have known each other since junior high. They're now in their 20s, and they met as long distance runners in junior high and high school, and now they're Olympic caliber runners. And they live in Windsor, Ontario, right across the river from Detroit. And one of the things that they do is race the trains through the tunnel that's under the water from Detroit to Windsor. And when you're reading it, I mean, you know that they're, well, you suspect that they're both going to live because the story opens in the present and he goes back and they're both alive then. So you know they're going to do this, but just reading about them doing it, almost pace by pace, step by step, you just get so involved. Oh, they're just great stories.
All right, that's Alexander McLeod's Light Lifting. Now, the next book you have, you know, this sort of goes on the theme. We have the Treasure Island Precepts. We have the Snow Child Legend. I'm assuming we're talking a little about Tarzan here in Patrick McDonald's Me, Jane.
Well, you would think so, but no, alas. But I love the way you brought that all together. this is the next. There, I have two books on this list that are biographies for children. And Me, Jane is a biography of Jane Goodall with the most wonderful illustrations and text. And it's just a terrific introduction to such an interesting woman. And this was a Newbery Caldecott Honor book this year for the best picture book of the year from the American Library Association. So that's Me, Jane. So that came out last year. And I just didn't want people to miss it because it's a wonderful picture book for, I would say, 5 and 6 year olds. And then Patricia McKissick and Frederick McKissick have written a graphic novel called Best Shot in the West, The Adventures of Nat Love, who was, of course, the famous African-American cowboy. And the illustrations are, they're not particularly detailed or they're not in any way, they're notable for the way he conveys, like, the bucking horses that Nat Love rode and the kind of motion in Nat Love's life. And it's really hard to find, I find it hard to find good biographies for that 6, 7, 8 year old range of readers. And this one, Best Shot in the West, is great.
All right. That's Patrick McKissick and Frederick McKissick, Best Shot in the West, The Adventures of Nat Love. Randy DeBerk does the illustrations on that graphic novel. And then Patrick McDonald's Me, Jane, a picture book for young kids about Jane Goodall. What's next on our list?
Next is a second novel. I had not read the first novel by Liz Moore, although I just checked it out at the library. But this one, her second novel, is called Heft. And it's one of those wonderful character-driven novels where you get to know the characters so well and you feel so close to them that at one point in this book, when one of the young characters, who's a teenager, is about to do something that I really didn't want him to do, because it wouldn't be good for him to do that, I wanted to, like, reach into the page and say, no, stop, don't do that, don't go any farther down that line. But it's about an older man who is morbidly obese and has lived alone for a number of years in his family's house. His mother has died many years ago. He's estranged from his father and his father's new family. And into his life reappears a woman who was one of his students many years ago, and her son, and a cleaning lady, a young pregnant cleaning lady. And the interplay of those characters, it's just splendid.
All right.
It's just a wonderful book.
That's Liz Moore's Heft. Up next, we have a couple more before we talk about some books that are coming out to look forward to in the next couple of months. But first, let's hear about Matt Ruff's Mirage.
Okay. Matt Ruff's Mirage. Matt Ruff is actually a Seattle writer and a very nice guy. Mirage, I had no idea what it was about. I just picked it up and started reading it, and it's a fascinating concept. It plays with, in its approach, it plays with the whole notion of September 11th, 2001.
Hmm.
In this version, in this book called Mirage, it was the Middle East who was attacked, and it was their twin towers that were destroyed, and all those people were killed. And it's what happened after that. And then there's a twist again. I mean, all these books, are there a little twist? There's a big twist in this book. And you sort of think, when I was reading this book, I thought, oh, I love this book. It's so inventive. And my gosh, that's such an interesting way of looking at the world in 2001 and what happened. And then I kept reading, and I thought, wait a minute, this guy is brilliant. How could he come up with this idea? So I was quite taken with this novel.
It sort of sounds like an alternative history, then.
It is an alternative history.
All right, that's Mirage by Matt Ruff. Up next, The Invisible Ones by Steph Penny.
This is another very, very good mystery. One of the things that I enjoyed very much about this is that the main character is a gypsy in Britain, and because he is a gypsy, and there has been a crime committed among the travelers, the gypsies who are living in caravans in England, because a crime has been committed in that society, which is a very closed society, he is assigned to go deal with that crime. And so it's one of those books that I like so much because you not only get a good plot, an interesting character, the writing flows, it's just fine, but you also learn a lot about the society.
All right, that's Steph Penny, The Invisible Ones. We have a couple books left. Tell us what those are.
Okay, Joe Walton's, among others, is up for the Hugo Award this year, the best science fiction novel of the year. I loved this book. It's about a young woman whose mother, and she believes her mother is a witch, and what happens as a result of that. What makes this book so special is that what saves this young woman from despair and disaster is her love of, her growing love of science fiction and fantasy books. So this is the kind of book, when you read it, you want to have a piece of paper and pencil handy so that you can write down the names of all the books that the main character discovers so you can read them too. And I interviewed Joe Walton, and it was just a fabulous evening because she's so, just so wonderful. And among others, is a very special book.
All right. So if you like science fiction, you like,
yep.
This is the book to get. Joe Walton's Among Others. Finally, Jeanette Winterson's Why Be Happy When You Could Be Normal. Now, that sounds like a self-help book. I don't think it is.
I don't. This is a terrific memoir. Jeanette Winterson has written many books. Probably her most famous is Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, which was very, very autobiographical. But here is her memoir. And she was adopted, was born in England, was adopted by an English couple who were Pentecostals. And Jeanette Winterson knew very early on that she was a lesbian. And why be happy when you could be normal is something that her mother said to her during the course of Jeanette's trying to grow up, to be herself, to live the life that she wanted to live. This is a book that I have some of those little darts that you can put in a book to show, like a quote or to mark a page or something. And this book is just, I think twice, it's like swollen because I put in so many of these darts to mark sentences, and it's just a wonderful book.
Well, that's a very tragic title. Why be happy when you could be normal?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a very powerful read. Jeanette Winterson. And Nancy Pearl is my guest. She's our book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa, joining us from Seattle, Washington, as she does about every 3 or 4 months. And, of course, you're also doing a lot of writing, but this time it's more introductions for this new Book Lust series. We talked about it for a moment. Yes. The first title is coming out, I guess, what, in April?
April 3rd.
And it is Merle Miller's A Gay and Melancholy Sound. And I was thinking, Merle Miller, I said, I know that name. And he did the oral history with Harry Truman that became Plain Speaking, that sort of resurrected his public life. You know, we became all infatuated with Harry Truman in the 70s, but really mainly because of his book, this oral history, to begin with. What is A Gay and Melancholy Sound about?
I just have to say, this is probably my favorite novel of all time, and it was published in 1961, and it's the story of a man named Joshua Bland, who, for various reasons, is really not only unable to love, but he's unable to accept kindness or love or caring. And this book just explores that. I reread it with great trepidation when I was trying to decide whether we should include it in this new series. And because I was afraid that I just wouldn't love it as much as I had in all the very many previous readings. But if possible, I loved it even more because I saw that even though it was written in 1961, there's no whiff of you know, the stale past in it. It's a book that's very alive. The characters are just fabulous, and Joshua Bland is somebody who you won't be able to forget.
All right. We'll look forward to that re-release of the book in April, Merle Miller's A Gay and Melancholy Sound, the first of 12 titles to be resurrected through this new Book Lust series. Now, there are a lot of interesting books coming out this spring. We just have time to just very quickly mention them. I guess there's a new John Irving coming out this year?
John Irving, in one person, he deals with many of the same themes that he's been dealing with, at least since A World According to Garp.
Yeah. Emily St. John Mandel, who I know you're a big fan of.
I am a huge fan. This is her third book. I read it with trepidation because I loved her first two books so much. It's wonderful. Lola Quartet. Don't miss it. And then the next one I want to mention, I know that you will be interested in it, Robert Caro's fourth biography, fourth in his series, of that multi-volume biography of Lyndon Johnson.
So he's finally getting it done? Is it done now, or is there one more?
One more after this.
Yeah.
At least one more, I think. But this one will be big, I mean, big, important time.
This is going to be the presidency, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
And I think that, I mean, these books, if some of the listeners have not read any of the Robert Caro biographies of Lyndon Johnson, this is the time to start with the very first one so you're ready to get to the fourth one when it comes out.
All right. Well, Nancy, as always, it is a great pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, and my pleasure, Rich.
Nancy Pearl is our book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. You can see the entire list of the books we discussed today on our brand new website, which debuts today at publicradiotulsa.org. Nancy Pearl's Book Lust Rediscovery Series kicks off in April with Merle Miller's A Gay and Melancholy Sound. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. You can listen to old shows at publicradiotulsa.org and take a spin through our new website. We'd like to hear your comments as well. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.